RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, go to our website, crushperformance.com. You can write to us there with any questions, comments, or smart remarks. You can also sign up for our newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, and get all the Crush links, trying to keep you on the cutting edge of human performance. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. And on social media, you can look at Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel. Just search out Crush Performance. So, 2019, a very big year for Crush Performance as we focus on some very, very important overlying themes. And this year, one of the things we're going to focus on quite a bit is the idea of performance cultures. Where do they come from? How do you create them? How do they sustain themselves? We all know those dynasties out there, whether we're looking at the business world, the sporting world, we can look at academics. Everywhere we look, there are these storied franchises and organizations that just seem to have it together. Well, what goes on inside of those organizations? Where did they come from? How did they get there? That's going to be the conversation today as we talk with high-performance strategist Brandon Marcello. You can check his information out at BrandonMarcelloPhD.com. I wanted to get Brandon on to address this early in the season as it's one of our overlying themes. We're also going to spend a lot of time this year talking about recovery and sleep. It's our number one priority for human performance. So inside of those cultures, we have to make sure that we're taking care of the individuals that make these things tick. And if we're not doing a good job there, well, flat out bottom line is your organization can't be successful. So what do we need to do to help our individuals inside of our organization be successful? Well, sleep and recovery is number one. Nutrition, hydration, number two, a very close number two, but critically important. Also this year on Crush Performance, the war on sugar will continue. We'll also be spending a lot of time looking at the mental game of performance. Listen, if there's one area where I think the future of pushing human performance lies, it's going to be in the mental game. Technology, most certainly, but not so much technology in terms of the equipment we're going to use when we participate or compete in sport or in business or in school. It's going to be the technology that allows us to better understand our bodies. The wearable technologies, the Fitbits, the fitness trackers, the sleep trackers are certainly going to be important, but there's technology out there now that's really giving us insights into how the mind acts and operates real time. It's information we've never, ever had before. And, you know, if you listen to the show, you've heard me say it before. We're at a biological ceiling when it comes to the physical side. We can make an athlete faster, higher, stronger. There's no problem there. And I mean zero. Given time and effort, not a problem. We know what to do there. Also, in terms of skill acquisition and talent development, we have an unbelievable understanding how those two come together now. So that's not an issue. What we need to now focus on, I believe, is understanding how we can create performance environments where individuals can aspire and succeed. And also, what can we do to tap into the mental side of human performance? Well, get set, because we're going to have a fantastic conversation today as we talk with high-performance strategist Brandon Marcello about performance environments and performance cultures. That's coming up right after this break. Stick around, everybody. A very important episode of Crush Performance right after this.
This is Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information with Jeff Crushell. Get in the action and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, go to crushperformance.com with your questions, comments, or smart remarks. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, our YouTube channel. Search out Crush Performance. Today, we are talking organizational performance And this is going to be one of our overlying themes for 2019 here as we try to look at organizations who are successful, what makes them tick, and how can we adopt some of their principles and their practices to help ourselves, our kids, our athletes, our employees, all achieve their goals and directives, and how can we create better environments to help the people around us succeed. It's a very, very important conversation, and I'm really, really glad that we were able to track down and contact Brandon Marcello, high-performance strategist. You can check out his information at BrandonMarcelloPhD.com. Brandon, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, I was actually very, very excited to get this conversation on the air. We had a fantastic show last week with Jeff Zylstra from Fatigue Science. And Brandon, you know, on our show this year, we have some overlying principles that we're really going to be focusing on. And the number one thing we're sort of going to dedicate a lot of time to in 2019 here on Crush Performance is looking at performance cultures, how they operate, how they come about, how the ones who sustain performance manage to do that. And then we're also looking at cool factors that influence individual performance, sleep and recovery, nutrition, the crush war on sugar will continue. And then we're going to also be spending a lot of time looking at the mental game of performance. And, you know, when we came across you and your name and all these things seem to be checked off in the check boxes. So we're really glad to have you on today.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to the chat.
Well, maybe for our listeners, you have kind of a very interesting history. Maybe we could start off by talking about how you wound up where you're at today, you know, kind of looking at the high performance strategist and helping organizations tap into and organize the way they operate so they can reach their goals and objectives.
Sure. So, you know, I guess how this whole thing started was I guess a lot just in terms of kind of attacking or limiting factors, just like anything we would do with an athlete or an individual, you kind of evaluate. And then when it came to evaluating myself, it was, you know, what tools in the toolbox do I need to get, you know, enhanced? Which ones do I need to optimize? Because I started as a strength coach. And then that just kept turning into something else and something else. And I realized I had deficiency in nutrition. So I went back to school, got my PhD in nutrition. Then, you know, I also got a minor in stats at the same time while I was working on my PhD because the big data stuff was coming down the road. So it was just a matter of really kind of just constantly evaluating yourself to say, what tools might I need down the road here to really optimize people's performance? And that's what's kind of led me to this high-performance strategist role where I work with teams and organizations and athletes and then the U.S. military to solve problems that relate to human performance.
Interesting stuff. And I'm kind of intrigued that you started as a strength coach, you know, down in the trenches, day to day with people. Were there things there? Were there signals there or issues there that you picked up on that sort of drive you in the direction you wound up going?
I don't know if there were signals, but again, it goes back to kind of, you know, how can I better serve these individuals? How can I give them a better product? And many times it's programming and learning and continuing education, you know, about those things, but it's also bettering yourself. And I think that's kind of what it came down to. I had a great mentor, right? And I look at him and this guy had so much knowledge. His name is Daryl Eto. And I was like, man, I just want to learn as much as and know as much as this person at some point in my career.
Yeah, and mentoring is so, so important, is it? You know, one thing we often say, Brandon, if, you know, when we're trying to figure out what to do, one of the things we always sort of joke about and sometimes talk seriously about is looking to the pros and the big organizations, the successful franchises out there to see what they've done and also look at some of the mistakes they've made so we can learn from those as well. So that's a pretty important process, I think, in the big picture for individual athletes, for schools, organizations, or even, like you said, you know, some of the major sporting teams out there.
Oh, I think you're right, 100%.
Well, let's talk about this. It's very interesting. You know, a few years ago, we were looking at the hardest things to do in sport. And, you know, we ran through, a quad jump in figure skating. We talked about boxing. We talked about, you know, hitting a major league fastball, all those things that we have fun talking about. And it was a real fun conversation. But the number one thing in my list, I think, threw some people for a loop. I said putting together a championship team. So I was thinking about that when I was sort of prepping for this conversation, and I think maybe the first question I'd like to have with you, right, or pose to you right now, right off the start, because you've been in the industry for so long, to give people an idea, how hard is it to achieve organizational success? Because, boy, oh boy, the failure rate out there is very, very high, but yet the organizations that seem to figure it out seem to hang on to it and just keep getting better and better.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head when you said getting better and better. I think that's the key. You know, there's this old term, which is good is the enemy of great, right? That old saying. And I really believe that's true, especially when we're talking about like the sports world, right? That, you know, I've seen coaches who, you know, year after year will get second place or third place or fourth place. And so what they try to do is they try to replicate almost to the T what they have done to get that second, third, or fourth place, thinking that next year they'll get first if they do it because they're so close. And in reality, what these individuals found was they just found the recipe for second place. Like, they perfected the second place recipe. And the recipe for first place requires a complete deviation from what they're doing. But that's a hard concept to grasp by many.
Isn't it hard? We're talking with Brandon Marcello, you can check out his great website, BrandonMarcelloPhD.com. Brandon, it is hard. And so, like, if we were to look at some of the successful franchises, I mean, let's look at the storied sporting franchises, for example. Like, we could maybe focus on the All Blacks and learn a bunch from them. We've had players that we've worked with go to and come from the Pinstripes, the Yankees, and every player who's been there said it's different in Pinstripes. We could look at Barcelona FC or Milan, or, you know, in the NHL, we could talk about the storied franchises like Detroit, or, you know, what Tampa Bay is doing right now in basketball, Golden State. These organizations have something special going on, and when we break them down, it seems that it comes down to the maybe part of it has a lot to do with the people inside the organization. There's very, very little turnover, it seems, in the administration and even in the core group of players in successful organizations. Does that kind of make sense?
I think it does make sense, and I think that's another great point to make, is that I think these individuals, it's very much people-oriented, right? It's very much who you have. Yes, it's what they know as well, but, you know, there's something to be said for having the right people in the right spots and letting them do what they do really well. And I think a lot of organizations fall. First of all, I think a lot of organizations aren't organized. Hence, they're just groups, right? So they're just a group of people who try to kind of be organized, but they lack organizational type of comfort, reins, rails, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, when it comes to people, I think the people and these types of people that you speak of are very much process-oriented. They're not focused on the perfection. They're focused on the process.
And that's interesting. You know, we talk about organizations, organizational success, the focus on the individual, and then the greater good, right? I think most people want to be part of something bigger than themselves. But that's an interesting point you make. Most organizations aren't that organized. Brandon, when you step into an organization as a high-performance strategist, what are some of the first things you try to get a handle on in terms of helping them move forward successfully?
Well, the big thing I do is just like anything, you evaluate the organization and determine, like, what is the flow? What is the organizational structure, for better or for worse? That's the most important thing to kind of figure out. And then determine what type of resources are they allocating to each area within that organization to support the people that need to perform at their best. And many times, that's where you can kind of you see most of the issues, is that there is no... there really is a lack of a collaborative effort. It's very much kind of everybody out for themselves and trying to keep their own jobs, and there's no cohesiveness. I think that's kind of the place where I start, is just kind of examining this organizational structure and where everybody reports.
Great stuff. We're talking with Brandon Marcello, high performance strategist. You can check out again his website, BrandonMarcelloPhD.com. So it's very interesting, and I've been looking forward to this, Brandon, because you know one of the things that I've been fascinated in is some of these sporting organizations. Of course, our world is the world of professional sport. Some of these sporting organizations that have such great talent, but cannot seem to break through. So we watch with great interest from the outside, hoping and praying and watching to see what kind of moves organizations are making. But there's so much that needs to go on internally that a fan or even a serious observer might not get to see. The roots of organizational performance run really, really deep. Brandon, if I were to say to you, one of the things we often talk about, and I want to see if you agree with this or you have different ideas about this, where does organizational performance come from? Where does the direction come from? We often say that it has to come from the top, but the action comes from the boots on the ground. Would that be a fair analogy in your mind?
I think it goes both ways. I think it is a top-down, bottom-up approach.
Mm-hmm.
I think let's just take, you know, since you had Jeff Zylstra on the other last episode, you know, I think it might be worth talking about sleep, right? And that, yeah, many times we optimize on improving the sleep of the players, but what about the sleep of the management and the front office and the people that are making and driving decisions? Because at the end of the day, you want people performing at their best across the entire organization. And if you can give everybody the understanding of the importance of sleep and bestow that upon them, then the likelihood that they're going to have this top-down, bottom-up approach of success is just stacked in their favor. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it stacks the odds in the organization's favor for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Success is hard, isn't it? Especially in the competitive world of business or even high-performance sport. It's really, really hard. I've had a chance to be around some great GMs and some great ownerships. And once you're inside those organizations, like deep inside, you get a real appreciation for how difficult it is because everybody's trying to be the best. And the playing field, the difference between, you know, sometimes even, you know, first, second, and third place is so close. But even from last place to first place sometimes can be a real close call. So it's competitive. So you need every advantage you could possibly get.
Oh, for sure. I think that's the big thing. And it's funny, and you mentioned this earlier, it's not just about achieving success once, it's about sustainable high performance. How can you do it over and over and over and over again, right? It's like anybody can win the lottery. Right. If that one person happens to pick those numbers and win that big ticket, they've won the lottery. But can they do it again and again and again and again? That's the key.
Right. And I like it. We're talking with Brandon Marcello, a high performance strategist. Brandon works in business, corporations, the business world and the sporting world, consults in the military as well. Brandon, let's go that direction right now, because I'm pretty fascinated about this. You know, the sporting organizations now, I'm really interested to see, they're looking beyond sport for ideas to improve internal culture or environmental performance. We know that business organizations are constantly looking at sport. And you and I talked about this the other day. The military is looking to sport. Sport's looking to military to get ideas for the edge. But do you feel that there are some real common themes amongst organizational performance, regardless of what genre you're in?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're dealing with humans, right, across any organization, whether it's a pro sports team, whether it's the military, whether it's, you know, a law firm, a medical facility, you know, it could be a Broadway show, you know, anybody. It's all humans. And how do we optimize human performance? And I think that's many times where we kind of overlook. We go right to, how do we make this person a better basketball player? How do we make them a better hockey player? And we forget that maybe we just need to make them a better human and things will start to fall into place.
Fascinating stuff. And that might come, boy, you mentioned a very, very important word, mentorship. And I, Brandon, do you find that's missing quite a bit? I mean, in the day-to-day business world, I think I personally see it missing a lot of times in the professional, even developmental sporting world. But that idea of mentorship, how do you create a great, great person if we're not setting good examples or putting them in an environment where they can learn the right way to do things?
Yeah, you can. And I think that's another big problem that we have is You know, I see teams hiring high performance directors, but they don't really know what that means or understand what that should entail. So they hire somebody that's based upon their beliefs and then hope that this person can figure it out. And many times there's more open positions than qualified individuals in which to fill them. And that creates a problem too, because these individuals lack the mentorship, they've lacked those skills, or they're in the middle of acquiring those skills. So now they are in a position where they just are reacting upon what they know, and it's not a vast amount of experience. So there's something that needs to be said for expertise, rather than, you know, and expertise does not mean number of followers, right, on social media. Expertise means expertise. Like, yeah, you've achieved this. Like, you've gone through the trend. You've failed a lot, like we spoke about, right? You've screwed up so much that the likelihood of you making these mistakes again is not going to happen, right? And that's kind of the key, and that's what a mentor does.
I agree. We're talking with Brandon Marcello, high-performance strategist. Great conversation here, Brandon. You know, we look at some of the storied and successful franchises, and I have to go. So I just recently was lucky enough to have an incredible trip to New Zealand, where I started working with some of their sporting programs. I was working with their new baseball pathways, and I got to spend a lot of time inside of their rugby culture and the rugby world, which you can imagine is absolutely incredible with the All Blacks and some of the super leagues that are going on there. But if we look at that All Blacks culture, I do believe there's a lot to be learned there, because one of their focus is not so much on individual performance, but making sure the people who are there fit into the mindset and the goals and directives of the organization. It's just a fascinating approach that I can't stop learning from. It's unbelievable.
Right. No, that's awesome. I mean, the All Blacks are known, you know, around the world as being one of the top organizations year in and year out. They do. They have a lot of, they're rooted in tradition. They have a mindset. They tend to get the people that fit within that mindset, just like you said. What an amazing opportunity for you. I'm envious. I mean, that would have been fantastic to spend some time with that group, because they get it. They understand high performance.
Yeah, they really do. And I had a chance to talk to some of the seasoned veterans who are still around coaching and mentoring, as we talk about mentoring the young people. So we were down at one of the universities one day, and we're watching the U19 national team selection process go on. So they had a bunch of really, really talented young rugby players there. And of course, the head coaches, national team coaches were there, as were a number of the storied All Black players from back in the day. And I had a chance just to hang out on the sideline watching the next generation of New Zealand rugby players go through the selection process for their national team. And I had a chance to talk to some of the veterans about their time with the All Blacks, what it meant to them, and how they continue to try to send the message to the next generation. It's just a handoff. It's almost tribal in some ways, but it's absolutely incredible, the culture that organization has created. And I think that's what a lot of organizations are striving for, but it's not that easy. That's a difficult thing, I believe.
Well, and again, I agree with that. It takes time.
Yes.
And that's something that people aren't willing to always put in, right? It's like they want to win by Friday, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, Brandon, and I agree so much. When you look at an organization, we talk about environments, creating an environment where athletes can achieve. If we switch over to the sporting world, and you mentioned our number one priority in human performance across the board, but certainly for our athletes, is sleep, rest, and recovery and recuperation. That's our number one priority, and I do believe, honestly, that every organization should be built around the quality and quantity of sleep an athlete can get, and then work out from there. But a close second is nutrition and hydration. You also have a very, very strong background in that. I was really intrigued to hear that you went and got your PhD in this area. It's a critical piece to human performance, but one that's still marred with misconceptions, misinformation, and it just seems more difficult than it should be. Maybe talk to us a bit about your experiences with the nutritional side and maybe some ideas that you've seen really, really worked in the past.
Well, I think it is. It's very much an individualized approach. And when I mean individualized, I mean there's a lot of considerations that come into play that people often overlook in the nutrition piece, right? So, for instance, let's just talk about, like, if an athlete is from, if we're talking baseball, right, You know, I'll give you a true, and this is a story that I came across. I was doing a nutrition audit for a Major League Baseball team. And they're trying to get their players to eat healthier. And I go into this minor league affiliate, and I walk in and I look in their coolers just to kind of see what they have for the athletes. And they have Greek yogurt, so very thick yogurt, black cherry flavor, because they're trying to get the guys to eat healthy. So they're giving, putting some better options in front of them. The problem is the demographic in which that team was made up was mostly from Latin America. And individuals from Latin America consume over 70% of the drinkable yogurt that is produced.
Wow.
So drinkable yogurt means it's very thin. It's almost watery, right? You can drink it down.
Mm-hmm.
So completely the other opposite end from Greek yogurt. Then the flavor profile that they gravitate toward is like the tropical flavors, which makes sense, right? So key lime, coconut, pineapple, not black cherry, not blueberry, and not strawberry that people are accustomed to here in North America. So, you know, while I appreciated this organization's attempt at trying to give players better options, they overlooked that aspect of really looking at the individual makeup of that organization to say, if we want to get them to get yogurt, we need a thinner, drinkable type with like these tropical flavors, and those things will be flying off the shelf, right? So I think that's sometimes some of the big barriers that people forget about, is that you have to look at the person's upbringing, where they are from, their ethnicity, and what their comfort foods are and what their typical food patterns have been their entire life, because that can impact so many things.
Unbelievable stuff. You know, that's something that that I think we're missing greatly at every single level. And the fact that it is individual is also something that's very, very important. It's so easy to get sort of blocked into these blanket programs, you know, one thing for everybody, but it really doesn't work that way. And that is a great, great example, Brandon. How interesting is that? And especially when we look at sport now, it is getting more and more global and international all the time. For organizations looking to tap into performance, that is a great tip right there.
Yeah, and it's about making it easy for these guys or even the women, right? It's about, how can I make things easier for them to achieve, right? I don't want to make things more difficult for them. I want to make it easier. So if I can have these offerings at their fingertips, then I'm stacking the odds in favor of getting some success there. And then they might come to me and say, all right, this is awesome. What else do you have for me? And that's the key.
And then you have them. Anytime you can hone in on the individual, get some buy-in, and really show that you care about them, that's what it's all about. Great, great stuff, Brandon. You know, and that's something that I think we can apply almost in every facet of our lives where we're working with other people. Great, great stuff. Hey, listen, everybody, we got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation looking at organizational performance with Brandon Marcello. Stick around. We'll be right back.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. We are kicking 2019 off with a bang here in a great conversation right now with performance strategist Brandon Marcello. Again, you could check out his website, BrandonMarcelloPhD.com, as we talk about organizational performance, one of our top priorities for 2019, as we try to delve down into building performance cultures and environments so the people around us can achieve. Brandon, really appreciate you hanging on over the break here. Just before the break, we were talking about ethnicity and making sure we understand the context of where people are coming from and what might appeal to them. And it got me thinking about a great experience I had. I'm from Canada, of course, and I did my degree at University of Calgary and had a chance to spend a lot of time inside of the Canadian Olympic Association and Olympic development models. When Canada was awarded the Olympics in Vancouver, everything changed. Prior to that, Canada was sort of one of those countries that was sort of fair play for all. You know, if you were a national team athlete, you would get a chance to go to all these competitions and world competitions. They would spend the money to get everybody to have a real good experience and fair play for all. But a real drastic change happened when Canada was awarded the Olympics in Vancouver. It was shortly after Salt Lake. They changed their mindset. and their approach to high performance. It wasn't so much a blanket approach for everybody. They really started focusing their efforts on the top performers, global performers. And they changed from, okay, everybody's going to get a chance to go, to you don't get to go unless you have a real serious shot at touching the podium. And they invested tons of money into the top end. And, you know, it was kind of an upsetting thing here in Canada, because that's not how we typically operated. But at the end of the day, what a massive shift it was. Not only did we invest in the athletes and the sports science behind those athletes, we invested in coaching development, and the technology that surrounded, and the performance teams that surrounded all those top people. And the trickle-down effect right to the grassroots, you know, post-Vancouver, has been absolutely incredible. And I think there might be something to learn when you look at these massive organizations like the Olympic programs around the world. And, you know, just talking about the international side of the game, you made me think about the impact of national sports and what kids experience when they're growing up.
Oh, for sure. I think one of the things that these international Olympic committees have is they all have developmental programs. But they really embrace that term developmental. So many times what you see is that these youth sports are not developmental. They're trying to create podium performances at a very young age. And the podium performance is what you want way down the road. There are certain prerequisites that you need to develop and kind of foster first before you can go on to the next piece. And I think that's where people miss the boat many times. But again, that's where I think the developmental systems are where people can learn at these Olympic levels.
Yeah, and the trickle-down effect and what's happened, what we've seen sort of post Olympics in terms of the grassroots development now, Brandon, has been nothing but incredible. So maybe a shift. You know, one thing that we're really, really dealing with, as you know for sure, when we look at the injury rates in professional sports, those injuries and the process and the lead-up to those injuries, it's not happening. It's not happening when these athletes are turned pro. It's happening in the developmental ages, and this whole idea of specialization, and you referred to a very, very important, I think, concept earlier on, this sort of peak by Friday mentality. You know, intuitively, it kind of makes sense for a parent to say, okay, hey, you know, Johnny loves hockey, so let's do hockey 24/7. Let's get him the best coaching. Let's get him as much ice time as possible. But at the end of the day, long-term thinking-wise, it's devastating to future performance. So I think sometimes we lose context of what really needs to happen in the long run. And maybe that ties back to some organizations as well.
Oh, for sure. I think that's what a lot of it is I think that these, they hear the really sexy stories at the pro levels are the ones where, you know, the kid picked up a baseball at age 2, right? And then all of a sudden they became amazing. But what they forget about is there's probably a lot more kids that have done the same thing that didn't make it to that level, right? And then took almost the same path. So it was probably less about that rigid, strict 24/7 type of mentality. And maybe just a little bit of luck and some other things along the way, right? Maybe they're that one outlier that could make it through. So I think that's kind of a thing that people often forget.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, would you be fair to say, I mean, do you ever think about these terms, you know, because we have a lot of parents listening today, a lot of coaches, we have a lot of young athletes, we have professional organizations and business people listening today as well. You know, one of the interesting things that's sort of come out of the show here is our connection to the business world. We've had a chance to interact with oil companies and construction companies, bankers, you know, everybody's looking for sort of that edge. And we talked about it earlier, you know, where the military's looking to sport and sports looking to the military, and inside of sport, we have NHL teams looking to baseball and basketball and vice versa. There's a lot to learn or to be learned from successful organizations, regardless of where they operate. But is there anything more powerful than the family unit for a developing athlete? Boy, oh boy, I just often think sometimes if we could really, really educate the parents to sort of just take it easy, really have a long-term approach and not get into this peak by Friday hype that we're in, we'd be much better off as a society. Does that kind of make sense?
Makes perfect sense. And as a matter of fact, I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine, and I was telling them that I do not work camps or clinics anymore with the kids that are attending. if somebody wants me to work a camper clinic, I request that I work with the parents.
Love
to
it.
To the point where, because they're all there anyway, just sitting around,
right?
So it's like, put me in a room with them, and I'll educate them on sleep and educate them on nutrition. I can bring somebody else in. We can talk about injury prevention and those types of things. So we can educate these parents on the importance of time off, long-term athlete development, ideal nutrition, proper sleep, and those types of things, because the family unit is essential, and parents sometimes need the parents.
Interesting. We're talking with Brian Marcello, a high-performance strategist, getting to the root. Boy, that's a very, very interesting take. I love that, Brandon, for sure. I've often been enamored with coaching organizations and, of course, coaching development. That was sort of our focus in 2018. And, you know, Canada has a storied history in terms of their coaching development program. New Zealand, Australia are right there. The U.S. is really, really trying to formulate some coaching development programs. But you teach a parent and a coach, you touch a lot of youngsters and young developing people along the way.
Oh, for sure. That's critical. I think, you know, it's almost backwards, at least here in the States, right? It's like the youth athletes are being coached by these parents who just, you know, that's not their expertise, right? They're just trying to help out and help their son or daughter and help advance their team. So, you know, they may go out there and only coach how they know how to coach, how they were coached, and that might not be the correct method for these young girls and boys.
Yeah, the growth mindset is as important for parents and the support people around athletes as it is for the athletes and coaches who are trying to drive high-performance environments. Great stuff. Brandon, let's talk about this for our listeners as we sort of try to wrap this up quickly. I think we could honestly talk for a few hours here. Unfortunately, we've only got a few minutes left. But I wanted to get to this, you know, to make it easy for people, because as you mentioned, we only know what we know, right? And if you're not in a place where you can go investigate, or sometimes it might even be difficult to understand what you should be investigating to move forward, maybe some simple tips for parents, for coaches, for teachers out there, for some of our athletes, employers and bosses. Sometimes little adjustments on a daily basis, consistently day to day to day, can make big, big differences in human performance. And one of the big things is just being healthy and happy sometimes, right? What are some of the small things that you think are in your experiences, have been really, really powerful in helping people achieve just a better lifestyle and higher performance?
Well, I think it all starts with like the quick wins, right? It starts with the sleep, like you mentioned, and trying to give people some education around the topic of sleep, and I think everybody understands the importance of it, right? There's certainly no debate there, but ways of maybe falling asleep better or creating an environment which is conducive to sleep and those types of things, I think that's critical. Again, the nutrition piece right after that, right? Giving people the quick wins on how they can optimize their nutrition, whether it's just by basic hydration or just some simple solutions like that, right? Even taking time out of the day to take some deep breaths and be mindful of things, I think, is very important. And you know, the other thing is it's okay to take days off. I think that's very important as well for mental clarity, to stay sharp, and to perform at a very high level, which is what anybody wants to do. I think there's a misconception of this, you know, we got to work hard and grind. And, you know, there are sometimes when you have to do that, but at the end of the day, those things are not sustainable, and that's not going to lead to sustainable high performance.
Oh boy, and that's a trap that we see all too often at every level of sport. Boy, if you and I were to go and canvass North America right now, or you know, pretty much anywhere in the world where we have young athletes involved and intrigued and loving sport, and we looked at their schedules, I think we'd be really, really surprised at how much overscheduling we're seeing on a day-to-day basis.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But it's so funny. If you take that same approach and you apply it to other disciplines, people would think you're crazy, right? Like, if I want to go out and practice baseball, you know, every waking minute of the day, parents are okay with that. But like, what if I wanted to focus on something else? Like, what if I wanted to cook, learn how to cook, and I spent all of my waking time in the kitchen? Would the parents say, you know what, maybe you need to step away from the kitchen for a little bit, right? Or if I wanted to, you know, whatever it would be, I think many times, other than sport, parents would pull you away from that, saying, I think you need to take a break, you need to take a second, you need to relax.
Right. Very interesting. I've never thought of that before, but you're so right. I mean, there's no question about it. Even when, you know, I see some of these kids who are very, very academically focused, they're sitting there, you know, hours and hours reading and studying and trying to get their marks up to be to get into Harvard or Columbia or whatever they're doing. You actually see parents say, hey, take some time away from the studying. You know, you'll be better off if you take a break. But you don't see that often in developmental sport.
Exactly.
Wow, interesting concept, interesting concept. Hey, Brendan, one last thing before we let you go here, something that I've been really intrigued in. I have great, great respect, of course, as everybody does, for our military, for our police, for our first responders, our firemen, EMT, ambulance drivers. This is a very, very serious area of development and performance, as important. And of course, the stakes are much, much different than sport. Sport is sport for sure, as serious as it is inside of that world. But, you know, we talked about it earlier, and you and I have sort of mentioned it in the past as well. The sporting world trying to learn from the military and the military trying to learn from the sport. Are there important things to be that we could take away from the military? Because, you know, you hear about the Navy SEALs and you hear about some of the rituals and the way they operate inside the military. I like your idea that it's human, but boy, the stakes are so much higher there in terms of safety and making good decisions. Does it get more serious there, or is it a very similar stream of thought?
I think there are differences, and I think there are some traps there that the sports world takes away from the military. I think they kind of forget the context in which many of these things in the military were developed. You know, I see sports teams hiring Navy SEALs to come in and take their team through a day's worth of training, right? Now, the whole purpose of training is to get better in preparation. Now, I think there is a lot you can take from the military in terms of communication, in terms of a structure, in terms of discipline and following specific orders and a chain of command, if you will, right? But, you know, bring the military in to teach your basketball team or your baseball team mental toughness for a day, it's not really going to do the trick, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just fooling yourself. It sounds cool and it's nice to say and it looks good on the front page of TSN, right? But at the end of the day, it really doesn't achieve what you want to achieve. These people, these athletes know that at the end of the day, they're going to be sitting on their couch and that this pseudo Navy SEAL type of training session is going to be done in 4 hours or 3 hours, right? Sure, it was fun. It might have been difficult, but, you know, even the Navy SEALs don't do all their training in one day, right? It doesn't achieve what they want to accomplish. So, it's like bringing in a basketball coach to teach my Navy SEALs, right? There's really doesn't make much sense there. So I don't think from a training standpoint there's much to be gained. I think from a communication standpoint, a chain of command, an organization-wise, structure-wise, standard operating procedures-wise, I think there's a lot to be learned.
Yeah, great stuff. Brendan, thank you so much for this conversation today. Again, Brendan Marcello, you can check out his website, brendanmarcellophd.com, for more information. Just a fantastic look at organizational performance and some of the great things we need to think about if we're going to try to enhance individual performance, cultural performance, and organizational performance. Brendan, thanks so much today.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. No doubt about it, Brendan. Thank you so much for that. And there you have it, everybody. Just a great discussion looking at organizational performance. Again, one of our overlying priorities for 2019 as we kick it off here with Brendan. His website, again, brendanmarcellophd.com. You could check out some of the great information there. But if you're coaching, if you're a teacher, if you're an employer or business owner, there is a lot to be learned from this conversation. And I think one of the big takeaways is the concept of process. It takes time. It takes time and effort and incredible insight to create success, whether it's organizational or personal, regardless of what your business is or what your endeavors are or your focus or your goals are. It takes time. And we mentioned it several times in the show, this whole peak by Friday attitude that we've adopted. it just doesn't work. One of the things we focus on in our programs, regardless of whether we're working with world-class champions or grassroots development, is the ceiling of potential. Whether an athlete is 40 years old or 14 years old, we're trying to look for ways to raise that ceiling of potential. And it doesn't mean right now. For our athletes who are competing at the highest levels, we're constantly looking for ways that they can improve immediately. Don't get me wrong. That's a big, big part of high performance success. But in the end, we're trying to look for ways and strategies that will raise the ceiling of performance in the long term. And that's sometimes very, very difficult to understand, especially when you think about it. When we look at specialization, for example, it does make sense to take an athlete who has a passion for a sport, volleyball, basketball, hockey, baseball, it doesn't matter, and get them every opportunity or help supply them with every opportunity to achieve year-round sport, personal coaches, skill coaches. We talk about camps and playing on travel teams, rep teams, year-round development. Intuitively, that sounds good. But here's what we know. Specializing before the age of 10, some studies say 12, really, really lowers the high-end potential of that athlete. We need to make sure that what we're doing right now has implications down the road, whether it's the next training day or the next competition, or whether it's 5, 6, even 10 years down the road. I personally like to model our athletes on 3-year cycles with a 10-year vision, depending on where they're at in their careers. So all of these things come into play, and I think one of the big takeaways here is the idea of process. It takes time, effort, and incredible strategy to create long-term success inside of an organization, and a lot of that depends on the success of the individuals inside your organization. Such an important conversation. So that'll do it for today, everybody. Listen, coming up next week, we're going to continue on our high performance mindset. We're going to talk about nutrition, A to Z with high performance nutrition. It's such an important factor in human performance. Again, our priorities here at Crush Performance: sleep, recovery, recuperation, restoration, then nutrition, hydration. That'll be our focus next week. I want to thank Brandon Marcello for joining us today, talking cultures and performance. Fantastic stuff. And I want to thank you guys for listening. Check out our website, crushperformance.com. Share the podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us there. Again, crushperformance.com. Talk to you next week, everybody. Now get out there and get better.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
This guy's been on the show before, and I loved having him on then, and I wanted to have him back on because of his most recent accomplishment, which is the fact that he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, which is really cool, and a lot of people do it, but not many people do it on prosthetic legs, on 11-inch prosthetic legs. So you guys know Adam Keyes. He's been on the show in the past. You guys know that Adam Keyes is really a very dynamic individual who, you know, I mean, the guy was 6'4" and, you know, he had an IED explosion that happened, and he is now a triple amputee between one arm and two legs. So Adam has kind of made it his mission to change one, the perception of what has really been going on with some of our vets and stuff like that, as well as he's been raising a lot of awareness for some pretty awesome charities that are out there, Wounded Warrior, stuff like that. And I just was really taken aback by him. You know, he was super excited to meet me because I was on Bar Rescue, and I was really excited to meet him because of the story that I had heard about him.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.